Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives. And Ian, the good martini from National Journal could be a very good martini for the short and long term if, in fact, it turns out to be true. One of the most underappreciated stories they write is in recent years the deterioration of the Democratic bench under President Obama's tenure in office. The party has become much more ideologically homogeneous, losing most of its moderate wing as a result of the last two disastrous midterm elections. By one new catch-all measure, a party strength index introduced by Real Clear Politics shows Democrats in their worst position since 1928. And one of the biggest problems is they don't even have good candidates at lower levels. They're essentially rallying around a flawed Hillary Clinton at the presidential level. But Democrats are rolling out a lot of established losers for their effort to win back the Senate. You got Feingold in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. They got Sestak, Congressman Barron Hill, who lost a few years ago in Indiana, Ted Strickland in Ohio. And it doesn't get much better down at the state levels, where Republicans hold even more dominant majorities in many of the key states. So if, in fact, this analysis proves correct, Ian, it looks like if Republicans can finally get their fingers on the lever of power, they might be there for a while.
Hopefully. So there, there are two things to keep in mind here, I think. One is, so the demographics of this are very interesting, the way that they sort of split at the national level versus the state level. You've got 49 state houses, and this has been widely remarked upon, but you've got 49 state houses, 33 chambers controlled by Republicans, only 16 controlled by Democrats. I think the number of states where Republicans control both houses is 26, 27, something like that. It's really extraordinary. And that trend is increasing. So you have, at the state level, demographic trends that are very positive for Republicans. At the national level, the Electoral College is very much split, and it looks to be leaning toward the left. So it's an interesting trend. But you add to that the ideological split, which is mentioned in this journal, as well as the age gap. And so those are two other things. So on the ideological level, I think this is largely, or at least significantly, attributable to Obama, who is not a party Democrat. The president has never cared about his party. He's cared about himself and his ideology. And so he's never made an effort to try to advance the party's interests. He's always made an effort to advance ideological interests. And what's happened in the process is you've lost all of those center-left Democrats that used to exist in the Senate and the House, and now you have the Elizabeth Warren caucus. And secondly, the age gap is a real problem. Look at the Republicans who are not on the presidential stage, but could be in 4 or 8 or 12 years. Tom Cotton, Ben Sasse, Nikki Haley, Kelly Ayotte, Susana Martinez, you know, all of whom are you know, at least a few of whom are potential vice presidential candidates. Think about the Democrats that you can name that seem to have political futures. Maybe the Castro brothers out of San Antonio, maybe Kamala Harris, the Democrat who's running for the Senate Democratic nomination in California, maybe Tulsi Gabbard, a congresswoman out of Hawaii. But other than that, there's no bench. So you combine all of that together. Yeah, it looks very good for Republicans, or at least more promising than many of the doomsday reflections would seem to suggest.
On to the bad martini now. And one of the reasons there are so few Democrats in position to step up for higher offices is because the president is doing things like this. This is from The Hill. President Obama said the U.S. is not losing the war against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, or ISIS, even though the group took control of two major Middle East cities this week. No, I don't think we're losing, Obama said in an interview with The Atlantic's Jeffrey Goldberg. There's no doubt there was a tactical setback. This, of course, it comes after the fall of Ramadi and Palmyra in Syria. Ramadi, of course, is in western Iraq. And in addition to that, you still got Josh Earnest over at the White House saying, yeah, we're deeply concerned about the attacks and the fall of these cities. But Earnest insisted there is, quote unquote, ample evidence that coalition forces are degrading ISIS's strength, and noted that the coalition supported forces had retaken significant areas in northeast Syria. He also dismissed Monday morning quarterbacking by others, including Lindsey Graham's call for 10,000 U.S. troops to help train the Iraqi army. Ernest said Obama is not comfortable with the full-scale reinvasion of Iraq. So kind of like with the Iranian nuclear debate here, Ian, if you don't want to do what they do, you want just full-scale war.
Yeah, it's another despicable straw man. You've got Eugene Robinson writing in the Washington Post today, why should we support the Iraqi forces if they can't or won't fight for themselves? Well, maybe it's because we haven't adequately trained them, adequately supported them in the new strategic problem that they face. But then when you put that to the White House, they say that you want to pursue a new shock and awe strategy. I mean, it's really dishonest, but of course it's nothing new. Now, let me say two things. One is, obviously, we are losing against ISIS, and there are two things. One is the fall of Ramadi, which is a huge strategic blow. This is a city that we had in our control that we could have certainly kept, but we've made very little effort to do so, and the gain for ISIS is an incredible one, not just strategically or tactically, but as a point of morale. The second thing is, jumping off of that morale point, there's a report out that ISIS now has 17,000 fighters from 90 different countries. This is a very important difference from, say, Al-Qaeda and any of its manifestations, either supposed core Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which were largely local or at least regional organizations. ISIS is recruiting very effectively across the globe, even if this report doesn't necessarily prove to be true. And maybe it's not 90 countries, but it certainly doesn't. Those sort of reports are coming out weekly. So in that sense, we're losing significantly too. We're losing the propaganda war, for lack of a better term. Let me say, too, that I understand how the president could say we're not losing if you accept that we're not actually fighting the war. The Obama administration signed on to combat efforts against ISIS, these very tentative combat efforts against ISIS, on the basis that this was a way to sort of boost its own foreign policy credibility without actually having to engage significantly. The JV comment is enough to know that they significantly underestimated this threat. And so now they have to downplay, trivialize the gains that this organization is making. So the fact is we're losing, but in large part we're losing because we're not even really fighting.
Ian, let's move to the crazy martini now. It's a double shot in the crazy martini. Both of them, though, from the Boy Scouts of America. The first story that came out this week was one that just makes you want to smack your palm against your forehead, because the Boy Scouts of America has finally addressed one of the great scourges of America, and that is water pistol fights. They have now banned water pistol fights at any official Boy Scout activity. They obviously can't stop them from doing it on their own time. On a much more serious topic, Robert Gates, the former defense secretary, somehow became the head of the Boy Scouts of America, which I didn't know until yesterday. But anyway, he addressed the national meeting in Atlanta and essentially said that the organization is about to surrender completely on the issue of gays in the organization. They made a compromise a couple of years ago. A lot of folks may remember where scouts who identify as gay were okay to join, but they could not have adult scoutmasters who were gay. And that looks like it's about to change. Gates saying, "We must deal with the world as it is, not as we might wish it to be. The status quo in our movement's membership standards cannot be sustained. We cannot ignore growing internal challenges to our current membership policy from some councils, nor can we ignore the social, political, and judicial changes taking place in our country, changes taking place at a pace over this past year that no one anticipated." So some folks will say he's being pragmatic. Other folks are saying it's a full-scale surrender from an organization known for moral uprightness for over a century. So, bizarre week for the Boy Scouts of America, Ian.
It's worth seeing why we want to bring these two issues together. And I think the overarching point here is that both of them are representations or demonstrations, I suppose, of the way in which the Boy Scouts, this organization with long, deep roots in what we would say is a very traditional sort of American soil, American thinking, is being taken over to a certain extent or giving into the leftward movement of the culture broadly. So if you look at the Boy Scouts counterpart, the Girl Scouts of America, it's a deeply feminist organization now. It is an organization that has swallowed completely the progressive vision of liberated womanhood that has taken over the past 50 years. Those are the women that the Girl Scouts are trying to create. The flip side of that radical feminization is emasculation. Part of lifting women up for these hard left feminists is also reducing men, trying to knock men off the pedestal that feminists think they're on. So what you see in this sort of silly water gun policy is this issue of the Boy Scouts sort of giving up to a significant and sort of public degree on any sort of manliness, anything that would seem to be the fiber of strength that we want to see the Boy Scouts produce. So that's the first thing. The second is that same sort of leftward mentality that is pushing the Boy Scouts is manifest in this capitulation to forces of toleration when it comes to the LGBT movement. I think Robert Gates is quite right, whether it happens now or in the future, the Boy Scouts are going to have to give into this for no other reason than because they're going to face significant legal challenges, and the legal culture has become one that's unforgiving to these causes. But there is one small thing that's very interesting in here that's worth pointing out. About 70% of Boy Scout chapters nationwide are chartered by local churches. And so when Gates made this call or the suggestion, he said that we need to ensure that these chapters are able to still remain loyal to the principles of the churches that sponsor them. So it's not just a sort of private organization being shunted to the left under the sort of activist culture that we saw in Indiana a couple weeks ago. It's also likely to raise a question of religious freedom, and that may be a very contentious battle that'll put the Boy Scouts back into the national limelight the way they were a couple of years ago.
Do you see that this could be almost a calculated surrender on their part? In other words, if you were really going to stick up for the principles that had embodied the organization for decades, are you really going to hire the defense secretary who led the cheerleading squad for lifting Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Yeah, that's quite right. The question is how strongly do they want to defend those principles? How willing are they to incur the wrath of mobs like those in Indiana and Arkansas and the rest? The fact is, it's hard not to be sympathetic to the Boy Scouts wanting to avoid that kind of bad publicity when you see that in the larger culture, bullying very often works. On the other side, though, the more organizations like the Boy Scouts, private organizations that were created to advance a certain vision, a certain set of principles, the more you see those organizations capitulate, the fewer places people on the right or people who might want to dissent from the juggernaut of progressive culture have to go. And that's a really sort of dangerous situation because it threatens to create a monolithic culture in which any sort of significant freedom of conscience doesn't exist any longer.
Well, that fear exists on many different levels. We talked about religious liberty, freedom of speech, and if folks think it's intense now, wait a month, depending on what the Supreme Court does.
Absolutely.
It could be ratcheted up exponentially. So on that note, Ian, thanks you very much for filling in for Jim, and we always appreciate having you.
Absolutely. Enjoy your weekend.
Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, and as we head into this Memorial Day weekend, we want to say thank you to all those families who have sacrificed for our nation, and on this particular weekend, all those families who have given the ultimate sacrifice, who have lost folks in service to this nation, in this generation, and in the ones preceding it. Thank you again very much for being with us. Tune in on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.